Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. This week we are joined by William T. Cavanaugh, who is the director of the Center for World Catholicism and Intercultural Theology at DePaul University. He is also the author of The Myth of Religious Violence, which is the subject of his lead article in America This Week. In the article entitled The Root of Evil, looks at the question of religious violence through the lens of the Boston bombings. I spoke to Professor Cavanaugh by telephone from his offices at DePaul University. I began by asking him what it was about the Boston bombings that raised questions about religion and violence that deserve further scrutiny.
Well, oftentimes we find out that the bombers are Muslims of one kind or another, and immediately jump to the conclusion that religion is once again responsible for an act of violence. And in the article I cite a few instances of articles in newspapers where this kind of conclusion was drawn. And what I want to do is complexify that a little bit and look at the background in kind of Chechen nationalism that the bombers had. And instead of just trying to shift the blame from religion to some secular kind of motivation like, you know, nationalism or just general psychological imbalance, what I'm trying to do here in the article and in the book is to level the playing field and say that it's not a matter of saying, no, it's not really about religion, it's really about something secular. But looking at both Islam, for example, and Russian nationalism, for example, or Chechen nationalism, looking at them both as certain kinds of pre-rational commitments that are not essentially different, so that there's not an essential difference between so-called religious motivations and so-called secular motivations, but that really secular motivations can often and often do behave in the same way that so-called religious motivations do.
Yes, I mean, what you're really doing is, you know, questioning what's become very much conventional wisdom is that, as you say here, religion is more inclined toward violence than secular ideologies. That's sort of a given for many today.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a given that's constantly reinforced both in academic sources and in the media and just kind of general opinion.
There are, as you point out, there are other ideologies out there, nationalism being one of them. Even the way we talk about freedom in this country is sort of an ideology, and yet that kind of goes unquestioned. Why do you think that is?
Well, because it's useful. I think the people that are behind a certain kind of secular ideologies don't want it subjected to the same kind of scrutiny as other kinds of ideologies. And so this division is created whereby their violence, you know, usually meaning Muslims over there, their violence is crazy and irrational and divisive. And our violence, being secular, is, you know, unifying and peacemaking, and sometimes we just need to, you know, bomb them into the higher rationality and so on.
Right. I mean, when you talk about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, these are questions that would be very uncomfortable to raise in certain situations, the idea that we are also perpetrators of violence.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And all of our language goes towards trying to divert our attention from that sort of thing. There was a talk given a few years ago in Qatar at a meeting of Muslim and Western leaders, and a State Department official, this was in 2007, and it was when, after the invasion of Iraq, while there was still kind of sectarian violence between Shiites and Sunnis, and the State Department official made the comment in Qatar that the United States was not going to stand by and let people try to enforce their views by means of violence. And I learned about this from Rafiq Khoury, a Middle Eastern journalist, referred to this in an article and said, basically, did the United States not use guns when they invaded Iraq. You know, I mean, the idea that violence is what they do, but what we do is not. What we do is peacemaking.
Yeah, you have another line here, is that when it comes to secular causes, like nationalism or in play, we become quite incurious. I mean, we've spoken a bit about this, but it is really surprising that there isn't more examination of this, you know, in our culture. And as you say, maybe it's just because it's sort of the easy thing to do. It's an out for us.
I think that's right. And in academic circles, there actually is a large literature on nationalism as a religion and civil religion, as it's called. You know, Robert Bellah's famous article that came out in the Vietnam War about civil religion in America sparked this debate that's an ongoing debate. And a lot of people argue that civil religion or nationalism is, in fact, a type of religion. I'm not sure that that's exactly what I want to say, but what I think that does is show that there isn't a kind of sharp line between so-called secular and so-called religious ideologies. To me, rather than call nationalism a religion, I want to question the whole sort of category of religion and say that really what religions are is just a constructed category which is constructed in different times and purposes in different ways for different reasons. And so what we need to do under every circumstance is look at why something is being labeled a religion and why something is being labeled secular. Look at the kind of political work that's actually going on in putting those labels on things.
And it helps, as you point out, to look at history and the fact that this kind of division between religious and secular is a rather recent phenomenon. It meant something completely different in the Middle Ages, for example.
Right. In the Middle Ages, when the distinction between religious and secular was used, it was primarily a distinction between two different kinds of priests. Secular priests were those that belonged to a diocese, and religious priests were those that belonged to a religious order like the Dominicans. And then in the early modern period, it comes to mean something completely different, that there's this area of secular pursuits that's entirely outside of the purview of the church. And of course, that arises in the separation of church and state and the kind of marginalization of ecclesiastical authority in the early modern period. So what that tells you then, of course, is that the distinction between the religious and the secular is not something which is universal and simply ingrained in the nature of things. It's a modern Western invention, and then when the West goes out and colonizes the rest of the world, that distinction gets imposed on the rest of the world, even though it just doesn't really fit in a lot of contexts. To call Hinduism a religion, for example, is something that today Hindu nationalists reject, because a religion is something private, and they think that Hinduism encompasses everything that we divide into religion, politics, economics, culture, art, etc.
Now, I imagine, you mentioned this in the article, the first response you might get to your argument is that, well, of course, but look at the cases in which religion has been a promoter of violence. You know, the Crusades is always brought out. Your point is not to deny these instances, but to point to the fact that it's perhaps more complicated than that.
Right, that's exactly right. I'm not at all trying to say, and I've been misunderstood on this point, I'm not at all trying to say that Christianity doesn't promote violence, or Islam doesn't promote violence, or Buddhism doesn't promote violence under certain conditions. That's a fact that it does. But the question is whether that kind of violence is essentially different from the kind of violence that's promoted by belief in the free market or belief in the nation. And I don't think it is essentially different. And once you begin to unpack this category of religion, it becomes clear that which things get put on which side of that divide, that religious-secular divide, is oftentimes completely arbitrary. So the intent, again, is not to deny that certain things that are labeled religions Christianity, Islam, etc. Not to deny that those things can and do promote violence, but it's to level the playing field so that we're looking not only at the influence of jihad on violence, or the influence of the sacrificial atonement of Christ on violence in certain conditions, but we're also looking at the ideology of freedom, you know, free markets and free elections and other kinds of our belief in the United States as a worldwide liberator, that we're looking at those kinds of things as also ideologies that are productive of violence in essentially the same ways that Christianity and Islam can and do promote violence.
Well, you mentioned the idea of idolatry, and that seems useful here to describe various kinds of misplaced loyalties, including, I mean, you were just saying, kind of American exceptionalism, that whole idea that we are special. That's something that often goes unexamined.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, yeah, one of the things that I didn't mention in the book, because the book is really meant to appeal to a sort of secularist audience, but the biblical basis for what I'm saying is precisely this idea of idolatry, that if you want to break down this kind of religious-secular distinction, it becomes very clear in the Bible that people treat all sorts of things as gods. You know, there's the golden calf in Exodus. There's Jesus saying you cannot serve both God and wealth or mammon. There's Paul saying about certain people in Philippians that their god is their bellies. There's people treat all kinds of things as if they were gods, as if they were ultimate. And that's just kind of one of the primordial human tendencies to sin, is that we have a tendency to ascribe godliness and ultimacy to all kinds of different things in our lives, all kinds of different relationships and, you know, metaphysical convictions and objects, money, things that we sacrifice our lives and other people's lives for. And so I think the whole biblical critique of idolatry is a way of kind of leveling this playing field as well, that what we really need to do is be looking for what's truly worth sacrificing for and what's not. And to add on top of that, of course, the kind of gospel critique of violence, I think it's important that the things that we sacrifice for are not things that we sacrifice other people for. I think Jesus's admonition to turn the other cheek, the kind of essential nonviolence of the gospel, is really at the heart of this.
Well, you mentioned that this is geared more towards secular readers, and that you have had some people who have misinterpreted you on the question of, you know, religion and violence, Christianity and violence. What have been the other responses? I mean, are people engaging in the conversation you would like to see happen?
I think they are. I've gotten a lot of positive response. One group in particular, international relations scholars, I've heard from quite a bit, and they seem to find this idea helpful because it helps to nuance these ideas of religion and politics that are thrown around in international relations scholarship in ways that are not very helpful. And there's a whole raft of international relations scholarship that's hostile or indifferent to religion, but there's also a kind of growing group of people that are sympathetic to the kind of what's called the resurgence of religion on the international scene. But I think both of those parties assume that they know what they're talking about when they talk about religion. And what I'm trying to do is try to unpack that a little bit and show that what people mean when they say religion is a very flexible and very ambiguous thing, and you need always to look at the political implications of how it's being used in those ways. And I think some international relations scholars and scholars in other fields as well have found that helpful.
Now, you hint in the last line of your article what the larger goal is here, which is moving towards peace. Maybe you can speak more about that.
Right. I think once we can level the playing field, then the job really is to look at things empirically and not through these kind of ideological lenses. And so, for example, you know, the Ayatollahs take over Iran in 1979, and we look at that through this kind of ideological lens, and we say, aha, they've had this weird religious revival, and that's why that's kind of the cause of mayhem in the Middle East. If we take my argument seriously, then I think what it does is kind of penetrate the fog of amnesia about secularist forms of violence in Iran, for example. And so instead of just thinking that Iran starts in 1979, then we go back and look at the sort of secularist violence that was imposed by the Shah in his regime from 1953 until 1979. You have a coup overthrowing a democratic government in 1953 and the imposition of this secularist regime that tortures and kills thousands of people, and then you get the overthrow in this Shiite reaction in 1979. Well, you need to understand both of those things. Everybody remembers that the Ayatollahs imposed an Islamic dress code in 1979. Everybody forgets that the first Shah back in 1924 imposed a secular dress code. And so once you level the playing field, then you begin to see that violence is not just all their fault, but is also the result of some of our own actions in the Middle East. And you can begin to kind of ratchet things down a little bit and look at things more realistically. And that, I think, can be productive of peace. If you don't think that religion in general has a tendency to promote violence, then you can look at different forms of Islam, see the varieties of Islam that are out there, and help promote some of the more peaceful varieties.
Well, Professor William Kavanaugh is the author of The Myth of Religious Violence and the author of the lead article in America this week. We want to thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you, Tim.